was not sure how many of you would make it through yesterday's or after yesterday's party. I have a clock here, and it shows me that I'm already 3 minutes down. So let me start with the housekeeping. So first of all, my apologies for not having this presentation in Polish, also for the lack of voice and the fact that I might have to drink a little bit of water sometimes. I caught a cold a couple of days back, and I'm not fully recovered yet with regards to the voice. The next thing I want to mention is when I put the slide deck together here for this presentation, for the topic. Better? Okay, thanks a lot. I created the slide deck and then suddenly I thought, oh God, 50 slides in 30 minutes. This is madness. But hey, you already heard 20% of the presentation, which might be good. The next thing I thought is yesterday at the PowerPoint karaoke, I saw some of my slides, so I wonder who stole them and actually used them for the PowerPoint karaoke. And I'll be tracking this person down as well. Elisa, are you there? No, I can't see her. Okay, I will have a word with her later. Okay, anyway, with regards to this, this is the first time ever the legal disclaimer makes any sense because it's actually material. No, just kidding, from my presentation. So now let's get on with the presentation. So let me start off with a couple of trends that we observe in the data centers, in SP data centers specifically. So basically, here are them. Here are they. It's the first one is virtualization, to have more flexible resources to add compute and storage resources flexibly to your requirements, which will ultimately move into a kind of cloud service, private cloud service within your data center. The next one is consolidation. So if you put more virtual machines on bigger machines, you actually have fewer nodes in your data center and you have fewer network ports, but those are, of course, of higher capacity. You need to converge, or your data centers need to be convergence ready, so you can actually take advantage of the fact that local area networks and storage area networks in the data center actually converge and will be available and accessible through one network. Sorry, I forgot the latest two. Environmentals is a trivial one. The less power you consume in the data center, the better it is for you because you burn less money by just powering up your devices. And last but not least, we mentioned it, consolidating the servers onto bigger platforms means that you need actually higher access speed. And this shows by the fact that we had 4 gig to 8 gig fiber channel 2 years back. Now 16 gig fiber channel has been announced. At the same time, 100 gig and 40 gig standard has been completed earlier this year. And you have seen the announcement in Elisa's presentation. We will be shipping 100 gig blades late this year, early next year, for exactly that reason. So other aspects. I mean, how did it evolve over time? So in the past, you had real servers. Each one was dedicated to one application, and you had storage devices that would rent out their, resources capacity to a number of servers that would actually use it. SAN and LAN was separated, and there was a limited use of virtual machines in the network, in the data center. So right now, we have a state that we call dynamic networks. We have a much broader use of virtual machines and virtual hosts. SAN and LAN begin to converge. Public cloud services are available to date. And we see that applications are load shared over multiple servers in order to provide the compute resources required. And this will eventually evolve into a private cloud in a data center where it doesn't really matter anymore where your compute and storage resources are located. Everything is accessible through a network, through a cloud, and it'll be highly flexible but easily manageable. So having said this, having had the focus on machines and services and storage and compute resources and everything, there's still a key element within this that is the network, and this is where we can deliver a lot of expertise to. And basically, here are the challenges or the requirements that the network has to fulfill. So basically, it needs to provide the performance required. It needs to be scalable. It needs to be resilient. The term the undestructible network is something that we talk about internally. It needs to be flexible in the sense that it allows for virtual machine mobility in the data center. And it needs to be easily managed, so we have to find a way to reduce complexity substantially. And you have to manage it as a whole. Right? Today, you have management systems for your network, you have management systems for your storage, you have management systems for your virtual machines, and those have to work together. And that's my only marketing slide I have in the presentation. Basically, what we bring to the table, what is our advantage in the data center here. We have a huge heritage of LAN expertise through the acquisition of Foundry Networks. We are the market leader in storage area networks, and we are very strongly tied into the VMware and Microsoft Hyper-V development, and hence are really aware of these applications. We are industry leader in performance, scalability, reliability, and energy efficiency, which we are more than happy to prove to you. Nevertheless, we know that we cannot do everything alone, so we are used to work in a tight ecosystem. We are OEMing with a number of big partners like EMC, HP, IBM, and others. And we have strong relationships with those guys, also with, as I mentioned earlier, VMware and others. As a result, we know how relevant interoperability tests are, and we put actually a lot of effort in our interoperability tests in our headquarters in San Jose. And as a result, we deliver best-of-breed solutions, also standards-based choice and agility, and also leverage your investments to maximum value. So this was the trends section. I understand that many of you might be interested in more technical stuff, so I put something in there as well, which is actually really technical. So the components of virtual networking, right? So that's a overview of what a virtual machine, typically the components of a virtual machine. You have the stuff you're interested in, the virtual machines on the top, the operating systems and the applications. You have typically a controller on the right. You have something that is called a vSwitch, a virtual switch within your host server. Then you have virtual NICs that actually communicate out through the real NICs. So having said that, if you have communication from virtual machine to virtual machine within your real server, that's forwarding is typically done by the virtual switch. And if that's implemented by the host system, then you're actually wasting up to 20% of your resources, compute resources for the I/O. And hence, what we recommend to do is to offload this into your NIC and actually free more resources for additional compute performance on your virtual machines. The other thing that you can do, and that's actually preferable for a number of reasons I will explain shortly, is that the virtual switch actually forwards transparently out all the data, all the traffic from the virtual machines into the network. And the network actually sends it back into this host if required, if the destination for this specific traffic is actually a virtual machine on the same physical host. The reason being, if you do this, basically you can have consistent security and quality of service policy throughout your all your traffic. So it doesn't matter whether your traffic goes from a virtual machine on one physical host to a virtual machine on the other physical host, or those two devices reside on the same physical host. You have the same security policy, the same quality of service policy being enforced by the network rather than a different component within the host system. For the Ethernet nerds of you that remember the standards, this requires that Ethernet is actually modified a little bit to actually break a fundamental law of Ethernet. We have to send packets out the same interface we receive them on. Right? So that kind of happen switching requires a little bit of modification and slight tweaking of the actual switching hardware being used. But nevertheless, that's the rationale behind this, and we ask you to pay attention to this. So virtual machines have the advantage that you can move them easily because you can basically this means that if they reside on one real server, you can easily move them to another real server, and there might be a couple of reasons to do though to do so. The first one might be disaster recovery, so your real server has crashed, and all you want to do is basically provide the same resources on another real server. The other one might be that the demand for your virtual machines have just increased beyond a level that can be supported by this real server, and hence you have to spread the load over more real servers. But what you need to take into consideration is that the virtual machine needs to end or needs to move to a similar environment, meaning it needs to have similar CPU. You can't just go from an Intel to an AMD that emulates something totally different. And you must not have any direct attached devices like CD-ROM drives or stuff like this, because that would basically freak out your OS. Like if you pull out your hard drive, something like this, that wouldn't be good at all to a typical Windows or even Linux or other operating systems. Also, it can't change its IP address, on the fly like this, in particular not if it's a server. And hence, you need to have the same network environment after the move, and this results in the demand to have a large and flat layer 2 network in your data center where your virtual machines can move around. Now, we all know layer 2, and you might or might not like it that much, but well, let me sum up a little bit. The historical problems we had with that. I mean, if you, for all good reasons, provide a lot of redundancy and more cables, if this device fails, then you can take over this link or fail over to this link. Basically, spanning tree will block many links in your network to allow one active path between your source and your destination, right? And when I look at this picture, I don't know how you feel and know how this what association you have with this picture. I always feel the red crosses actually look like little patches that someone gets after he fell off a step of a st of a number of stairs, really. So it looks like a patient. It's inherently it has worked for a couple of years, but it's actually by design, not, I'm not saying broken, but not optimal, right? And we need to fix that. So the vision is to have layer 2 multipathing in your network, meaning that you can use all redundant paths at the same time throughout your network. You don't waste network resources. And you have a much better, return on invest in your network. So what ways do we have to do this? And actually, I could be really brief with this section because Elisa from AMSIX, they have been very great in basically sponsoring us because they use our gear, and they actually use, at least one component of that solution quite extensively in the network to transport the impressive 1 terabit of second. So one way to do this is actually we can use MPLS in the data center, and that's actually a very let me say, interesting approach, and because I rather would not bore you with theoretical stuff, I want to share with you a real case study, a real world case study. One of our customers implemented his network like this, and I want to tell you why. So those were the requirements they had: data center consolidation, green design, virtualization, mission critical, high availability. So typically everything, for normal typical data center. So this is what they did. As a result, they basically had 3-layer design, access at the bottom, aggregation in the middle, a couple of boxes to provide firewalling and other connectivity or other services that we don't deliver directly. And then at the top they have WAN edge and core connectivity and internet connectivity to multiple service providers. So at the bottom you can see the color representation for the different layer 3 VPNs, VRFs they were using, but they were also using VPLS and VLL to have point-to-point layer 2 connection in the same data center to allow for those moves. So with regards to the protocols they had in place, MPLS TE and fast rerouting, MPLS layer 3 VPNs and VPLS, as mentioned earlier, on the services side. And on the protocol side, they had BGP, OSPF as their IGP, and VRPE for redundancy of the default gateway. And this is basically the traffic paths and the, you know, the MPLS traffic engineering effort they have put in is actually quite limited, and they have nevertheless a huge service and a very good offering. So what are the key components, or let me say, for the two alternatives they had available to them, they actually had those key components. So the first one would be, by the way, that's, you know, to some extent my second marketing slide. I didn't remember this one when I mentioned the other one earlier. So basically, if you want to do an end of row, middle of row design in your data center, what you need is high density, non-blocking line cards for your server connectivity, right? And an intelligent cabling solution. So this is what we offer there. It's a 48 by 1 gig line card, and you have totally passive patch panels that you can put on top of your individual racks. Or you can go for the top of rack approach, but what you need there is a full-featured MPLS device that has high performance, but is also affordable because it's a top of rack device, right? And it has needs to have deep buffers depending on your applications. So there we have the NetRNC, as it's a one rack unit device, and it's really, you know, compelling offering there. But why would the customer go for this solution? The rationale is actually pretty simple. They did the math, and they came up with a CapEx saving of 35%, and that's the more interesting stuff. Reduction in power and cooling of 58%, and the operating complexity came down from, I believe, several 80 or so devices to just a number of 6 or 8 or so devices in our solution. So that was a tremendous saving for them. I see I'm running low. Maybe I have to cut off the last part of my presentation. So what is key, though? If you have high-performance servers connected at 1 gig into your data center to your switches, you need, in the core, much higher bandwidth. And while we have 100 gig available to Zoom, you might just be in the range of excess of 10 gigabit, and their load sharing in MPLS networks is actually very critical and key, and hence I just wanted to share with you the algorithms we use. Basically, for an IP packet that goes into the MPLS network, into an IP over MPLS or layer 3 VPN service, we look at the IP payload of the original packet to do a load sharing decision here on a lag, on a link bundle further down in the network. And if we talk about an Ethernet frame, an IP Ethernet frame that came into a layer 2 VPN endpoint, like in the AMP6 case, they have VPLS endpoints. If such a frame comes in on such a lag here, somewhere in the network, somewhere behind your transit LSRs, we actually look at the Ethernet payload plus layer 2 and layer 3 headers of the original packet. So that's not the outer header here, but it's actually of the original data payload. And that's really, you know, fundamental advantage we have to actually make this work. And we prove this every minute of the day, every second of the day with the large installations we have, as mentioned earlier. So having said that, this is what you can build and do today with our offering. Needless to say that with that MPLS functionality we have, we also provide a compelling solution for your transport network. But in order to find out about this, I ask you to come to our booth and have a chat with our colleagues or with my colleagues here based in Warsaw. So the slightly into the future, there's a new approach that we are taking, and that is using Trill to do the virtualization. A quick overview of Trill. Basically, it uses in the core of your network, it uses link state routing. It does point-to-point forwarding in the core. It can auto-configure without a lot of effort, or with no effort actually at all, and then it does its forwarding magic, and I'm going to explain this in the next couple of slides. Basically, here is what I mentioned. The devices power up, they send out the hello frames, either ISIS or Trill ISS or FSPF, and that's a link state protocol, right? It's not like spanning tree where you actually send out a packet and then hope someone receives it. This is actually link state protocol in the sense that you have acknowledgments from the other side and you really build up a very solid topology. Having done this, one designated R-bridge is elected, and for each VLAN an appointed forwarder. And after this is done, basically the forwarding can happen, and if you go from a host to a target, the appointed forwarder on each of the networks would be responsible for taking the packets and sending it across the Trill network. Right? While this is a bit short, I want to show you how it actually works. Here you can see the original data frame from the host H to the target MACT into the first R-bridge. So this one would actually add the Trill header. It knows by normal MAC learning processes that the destination R-bridge for MAC address of T is R-bridge 3, and would use this as a destination R-bridge and put in the source R-bridge in a later point. And with regards to the MAC addresses, it would actually use, because through the SPF algorithm, it knows that the shortest path through RB3 is through RB4, would actually put the MAC address of RB4 into the frame, right? And RB4 would just swap the outer MAC, would leave the rest intact, and RB3 would actually remove the Trill header and would deliver it as a standard Ethernet frame to the target. So what have we gained? What's the advantage? The advantage is that in the Trill fabric, we have time to live field. So if it ever were to loop, we have a loop mitigation because the time to live would actually count down and the packet would eventually die, different from normal layer 2 networks. The other thing that we have is we have an SPF-based protocol that detects all the possible paths through your network. Here it shows two through the two core nodes, and it actually utilizes all of them. And basically, the load sharing decision would be done very similar to what we have today based on a hash of the incoming packet. So we would do an ECMP calculation or an ECMP choice based on source destination MAC, source destination IP, protocol, UDP, TCP port numbers. This is relevant to avoid any reordering in the network if four frames taking different paths. So having said that, basically this fulfills all the requirements that we have set out earlier, that we use all the paths in parallel and have a lot of advantages there. So here's a little animation of what happens if a device dies. We immediately reroute around it, of course. This is the self-healing, non-disruptive recovery. And the other thing is that if you add more connectivity in a Trill fabric, you automatically increase the bandwidth. Right? So if you need more than 10 gigabit, just put in another 10 gig port and more, and it would automatically detect this resource and actually use it. So the next thing is the distributed intelligence. Basically, this means that you can ultimately will be able to configure one device with your, security policy for the traffic that has been sent by this device. And if the virtual machine moves, this configuration will actually move with it. We call this automatic migration of port profiles. So from wherever to wherever your traffic goes, basically this kind of policy enforcement is done automatically by the network, and there's no more complexity that you have to add, right? Or operational things you have to do. It behaves like a logical chassis. I mentioned this earlier. So if you add more devices, you just increase the footprint of the fabric and the number of ports in the fabric, but you don't add complexity. And this one is a little bit further out. Even if you want to add some service to the traffic, you could dynamically reroute it and forward it through an intermediate device and do some, you know, magic on it, let's say encryption of data while in flight, for example. So I'm done with the drill part. I was about to embark on fiber channel over Ethernet journey to tell you how we could, you know, virtualize the I/O of a certain server to make actually use of the converged network. But I lack a little bit in time, so I want to show you on a very high level what is the advantage, and then I would basically end the presentation. So here's the challenge, or here's the requirement. If you have two different type of networks, if you have LAN top of rack switches and SAN top of rack switches, here's the promise that FCOE gives you. Basically, you can remove one set of devices, come up with FCOE-capable top of rack switches, and connect the servers with just one cable rather than two to the top of rack device, and actually bridge out into the fiber channel SAN fabric or the local area network at the top of rack rather than already at the server level. So with that, I basically skip the rest of my presentation. Couple of slides, you can look at them if you want offline. And want to give you the summary. Basically, it says that there are multiple ways to build your network, but there's no one size fits all. I mean, you have your specific requirements, like and to differentiate for you from your competition, you need to make sure that you have a standards-based solution that gives you best of breed in all areas. You know, so if the network, the storage, you know, firewalls, load balancers, whatever, and pick the virtualization tools that help you to achieve those best. And last but not least, those pieces are coming together in very short time if they are not already there, like MPLS. So with that, thank you very much, and I hope I can take one or two questions
Yes, you can.
if there are.
No questions. Okay then.
Okay.
So thank you very
Thanks very
much.
much for your attention.